Broadcasting live from the Wake Forest Business Radio X studios in North Carolina, it's time for Metro Raleigh Business Radio, where business leaders in Raleigh come to tell their stories.
Welcome, everyone, to the first installment of NC Tech Talk. I'm Brooks Rayford, President and CEO of the North Carolina Technology Association, or NCTA. And NCTA is the presenter of this show, which will start to be now monthly, fourth Monday of every month at 1 p.m. live on Internet Radio. NC Tech Talk is a partnership with Business Radio X Metro Raleigh Station, and we're thrilled to be in their studios today. As I mentioned, this will be a monthly live Internet broadcast, and we will have archived links of past shows once we have some. So check the news tab at nctechnology.org, where you'll find links to all of our previous programs. Our goal is to feature timely guests and topics that are relevant to the tech and broader business community in North Carolina. For those of you unfamiliar with the North Carolina Technology Association, we are a not-for-profit, membership-driven trade association. Essentially, we are the industry group for the tech sector in our state. We support the growth of North Carolina through executive engagement, which is our term for events and activities, public affairs, which is lobbying at the state and federal levels, and knowledge workforce, which is our term for talent, all things talent. We have a lot of companies that are out there trying to find talent, secure that talent, develop that talent, and keep that talent. So that'll be a big topic of ours today as well. If you ever want to learn more about us, you can visit our website at nctechnology.org, and our Twitter handle is at NCTA. We also have a company page on LinkedIn, so we encourage you to find us where we live virtually. A few words about the format of our show. We're going to have today a couple of in-studio guests who are active with the North Carolina Technology Association. We also have a couple of my teammates on the professional staff who are here. We'll talk with our guests throughout the course of the next hour or so. And to begin with, I'd like to introduce my coworkers. Michelle Calton is Vice President of Membership Development at NCTA. Welcome, Michelle.
Good afternoon, Brooks.
Good to have you here. And Mark Montoro, who is Senior Director of Programs and Communications with NCTA. Mark?
Afternoon, Brooks. Good to be here.
Thanks for being here. We do have a couple of our leading executives within the membership of the association who are here as our guests today. Steve Chase, who is Vice President of Global Sales for Alphanumeric Systems based here in Raleigh. Steve?
Thanks for having us here today, Brooks.
Glad to have you with us. And Craig Skates, who's a partner with ResolveIt, IT consulting organization that has lots of locations around, which I'm sure you'll tell us about later. But welcome, Craig.
It's great to be here, Brooks.
Thank you. And last but certainly not least is our good friend Ann Ravel. Ann is the owner of the Metro Raleigh station for Business X Radio. She also owns the Wilmington station, and she's a great member and partner of NCTA and has been for a long time. And Ann, we're thrilled to be in your space today.
I'm so glad to have you in our studio today.
Thank you.
Brooks, I was hoping we could spend a little time right at the top of the hour talking about the topic of public affairs and how NCTA works in public affairs. We are members of NCTA. I've been involved with NCTA for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years now. And one of the benefits of that membership, from my perspective, is that NCTA really has its pulse on what's happening in terms of public affairs, in terms of what's going on at the North Carolina legislature, and tracking what's happening in terms of issues that are important to technology companies. So tell us a little bit about how NCTA represents us and the tech sector to the public officials.
Sure. That's actually a great opportunity for me to let you know about the membership of our association's profile, because it explains a little bit about why we do this public affairs work. We have a lot of large name brand companies that are members of our association, but we are predominantly small and medium-sized company oriented. 75% of our member companies, in fact, have fewer than 50 employees in the state. Very few of them have a fleet or even one lobbyist working for them full-time or even part-time. And so one role that any statewide trade association can play is to be that voice for the sector, pay attention to issues that might be a little bit under the radar for many of our companies, but are very important to them. And so one of the key roles we play is to be the eyes and ears for our members, and also the voice, the collective voice for our members. So that's why we pay attention and get involved in public affairs, really at both the state and federal levels.
Oh, okay. So how do you use outside lobbyists, or do you do the lobbying internally?
Yes.
Yes.
I am a registered lobbyist. Mm-hmm. The law in North Carolina requires that if you are the principal of an advocacy organization, you have to register as a lobbyist, even if it's not your primary responsibility. Okay. But I do spend a good bit of time meeting with members of the legislature, members of the governor's staff, staff at the legislature, et cetera. And so it makes sense for me to be registered in that way. We do employ outside counsel. For about a dozen years now, we've had the firm of Brooks Pierce, which is headquartered in Greensboro, but has a significant presence in Raleigh, represent us on state government matters.
Mm, okay.
And then lastly, we have a partnership with a national IT association that we're affiliated with that helps us at the federal level.
Gotcha. What kinds of things are you working on right now?
Well, the legislature is in session for at least a little bit longer for what they call their short session, which we can get to in a minute. But mainly their role at the moment is tweaking the budget. Mm. And it's amazing how they're able to work in a lot of other things besides the budget. One of the ways they do that is in the budget document itself, there are often many, many pages of something called special provisions. Mm-hmm. The average citizen has no probably awareness of or even interest in that, except that that's where a lot of the mischief can be inserted or fixes to things. We often are working with legislators to insert language or remove it or amend it there. So right now, a couple of the bills that are hot on our radar, one is a bill that's already passed the House and is awaiting action in the Senate on approving the ability to engage in crowdfunding in North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
Which is very important to the entrepreneurial community and the investment community. A second bill that we've spent a great deal of time on this session is on patent troll reform or patent reform. There's a bill that, again, has passed the House unanimously and is awaiting action in the Senate.
Okay.
The Senate has actually passed a bill that contains that language in a larger bill, but that makes things a little complicated. So we're following those two especially closely right now.
So what is a short session, and why do we need short sessions? Are there long sessions?
I don't know that I can answer why we need a short session, but I'll tell you what they are. So North Carolina has actually a two-year budget.
Oh.
So every other year, in odd years, meaning in 2013, the legislature comes to town just after the election at the end of 12. So the new legislature comes to town in January, and they meet typically until June or July. The state's fiscal year is July 1. So their goal is to pass a budget, but it's a two-year budget that starts July 1 of the year that they're in and continues for 2 years. Well, some years ago, they began returning to Raleigh for a very brief budget adjustment session designed to address revenue differences from what they may have predicted, that sort of thing, just to make adjustments. So the rule is you can't introduce new legislation in that short session unless it affects the budget or has a budgetary impact. Well, that short session has now extended itself to be usually a couple of months long, and a lot of other activity happens. So they came in mid-May. We're recording today or broadcasting live on the 30th of June. We do not have a budget. The uh-huh. new year starts tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
So there's a lot of activity right now in trying to get a budget passed.
I see. So you're working on all of these really interesting things here in the state. Do you have any involvement on national issues that are affecting tech companies?
We do. Most of our companies don't depend on us to be the primary megaphone for mm-hmm. them on federal issues. And we recognize that as a state trade association, we probably aren't positioned to have a particularly powerful national megaphone. So we are affiliated with a national IT, really the primary national IT association called CompTIA. Mm-hmm. They just acquired Tech America recently, which is really a lobbying organization. And so they are a great resource for us. And under their umbrella, we and other state tech associations, as you might imagine, there are many of them around the country, we can collectively join forces and have a greater voice on issues like immigration reform, issues like H-1B visas and limits on those, other talent-related legislation, too, at the federal level that's important to us. So we do pay attention at the federal level. We lend our name and voice from time to time. We know our congressional delegation and work with them very well, but we really depend on our national partners to be our megaphone for those activities.
With this being an election year, we have a lot of activity out mm-hmm. there. How does NCTA get involved in terms of elections? Do we support individual candidates, any particular platforms, any financial support?
NCDA does not get involved in the partisan election activities in that we do not have a PAC or political action committee, and we also do not endorse candidates. However, we often will feature candidates or office holders in forums, either as standalone presenters for Q&A time or on occasion candidate forums. In fact, a previous gubernatorial election, we actually hosted the candidates at the primary level to come in and brief the members on their positions, take questions, et cetera. We also prepared a position sort of document or packet on issues of importance to the tech sector. So that's really how we engage, is to try to influence all parties.
That's great. It's really helpful because I haven't really ever understood the scope of our involvement in the public policy issues. So thanks for that.
Sure. Well, actually, that's a great opportunity for me to switch gears a little bit. Talking about policy brought up the topic of talent, both here and at the federal level. And one of our guests today, who I mentioned earlier and you heard from briefly, is Craig Skates, who again is with ResolveIt. He is here today to talk a little bit about his company and himself, but also about what they're seeing in the talent arena. So, Craig, first of all, tell us a little bit about you and also about ResolveIt and your role here in this community and the other places where you have locations.
Okay, Brooks, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. So I've been here in the Triangle area about 14 years now, and 10 of that with ResolveIt. We opened the ResolveIt office here August 1st, 2004. So we've got our 10-year anniversary coming up here in a few weeks, which reminds me I need to get a cake ordered and get ready for that. ResolveIt's a great company, headquartered out of the Washington, D.C., and originally founded out of the D.C. area. We spread out a little bit, not only across the country, but up and down the hemisphere here. So we do technology and management consulting, and that covers a variety of things from project management to system and data architecture to application development support, infrastructure, a host of things related to solving business problems through technology. So our consultants are engaged every day throughout the country with Fortune 1000 type customers, solving problems in the area of traditional IT, but also within the business organizations like sales operations, manufacturing, finance. Working on both sides of the house, the technology delivery side as well as the business side of the house that usually defines and consumes IT. So we cover a fairly comprehensive waterfront. We also have an office down in Buenos Aires that we opened a couple of years ago, which is a lot of fun and a great place to travel to if you get the chance. We do some projects there locally within Argentina for clients there, but we also support some of our U.S.-based projects up here with those resources as well. So at the end of the day, we engage with clients through managed services, through managed projects, and also through strategic staff augmentation resources.
Well, good. You've got a lot of interesting locations in that mix. Tell us what's on your horizon the next 6 to 12 months in terms of the priorities of where you'll focus your growth, or does that vary by region for you?
It does. Obviously, our clients take us in a lot of directions. As relationships grow and deepen within those clients, it opens new doors and opportunities. We've got four sort of center mass locations in the country right now with D.C., Raleigh, Cincinnati, Ohio, and the Silicon Valley area. I'm responsible for the operational activities in Raleigh and Silicon Valley. So we're really looking to explode our growth around those four centerpiece areas and markets where we've had an established business. So that's doing more things with the existing clients that we have, but also branching out, obviously, to new companies that have similar problems.
Good. Well, one of the things we talk about at the Tech Association a great deal, and we hear from a lot of our member companies who are hiring tech talent, whether they're tech companies or not, is about the shortage of talent or the difficulty in finding the talent they're looking for, particularly the higher up you go in skill level. What are you finding? How are you helping address that sort of shortage?
Well, I can tell you, if you're involved in hiring talent today, especially in the technology community, and you're not frustrated and struggling, then you're not breeding, because you know, we, the good news is that we're enjoying it's a recent high in employment opportunities within the technology skills community. So that's great news. The downside is each incremental hire for most companies in that area is a struggle. I have the particular pleasure of running the Raleigh and Silicon Valley offices, so that's great in two fabulous markets. In fact, I think recently, a couple months ago on CNN, they had listed the top two places to do business in tech right now are Silicon Valley number one and the Triangle number two. That's great. But that's also two of the hottest spots for companies wanting to find talent and put talent to work here. So they're very competitive marketplaces, mm-hmm. you know, for talent. So, there's definitely, in some of the key markets where we operate, we see a definite shortage of available talent. There's lots of great talent here. They're all working and doing things for the most part. So we have to become more creative and more resourceful every day on finding and locating our next hires, and sometimes that even involves bringing them in from outside of these markets.
Well, you're probably really glad we finally have some direct flights between the Triangle and the Bay Area, which we didn't have for a long time, since you're going back and forth. I want to bring in Michelle here, because one of the things you mentioned was not only are you as a company whose business is to try to help other companies find talent, but we as an association have a role there too. Our goal is to try to provide certain resources for our member companies that are facing that challenge, and Michelle leads some of our activities along those lines and helps beef up our resources. So tell us a little bit about what the NCTA has to offer.
Sure. First, I'd like to mention that NCTA has an interest group focused on knowledge workforce issues for members. All employees of member companies have access to participate in these meetings, meeting on a quarterly basis to discuss education issues and workforce development issues. Actually, Craig is on our steering committee and helps us determine what topics we're going to talk about on our quarterly schedule. And one that we just had a couple of months ago was on nurturing new sources for talent. So you've got the traditional universities and community colleges that you're pulling from, but we're starting to see a lot of growth in private training organizations and code academies across the state here. So the knowledge workforce sessions are definitely key and a very popular outlet for our members. A couple of other things that I'd mention is around the talent resources that we provide for the general technology community. We publish a monthly IT job trends report that's picked up by a lot of the media outlets in the state. It highlights some of the top skills in demand in the Raleigh market, the Charlotte market, and then how North Carolina is doing versus national. And then we also have a snapshot on workforce analysis and some of the topics around workforce that are driving discussions and within our membership. We also have a job board, so it's a great opportunity for members to be able to post what opportunities they have available, and we drive a lot of traffic to jobs from job seekers to our website to be able to peruse those opportunities. So not just local talent, but national talent, folks that are looking at moving to the state have that as a resource. And then just over the past 2 years or so, we've been working with a number of partners in the Triangle and then now in Charlotte to launch technology-oriented job fairs. We've branded it as Come Tech Out North Carolina, and they've become really a great opportunity for companies to, whether they're hiring one position or hundreds of positions, to be able to interact with job seekers and get some attention for the positions that they're hiring for.
Great. You mentioned the IT job trends report that the association publishes, and I believe typically that comes out in the early part of a month through the previous month. The last 5 months, or I should say the first 5 months of this year, we've seen a slight uptick in average number of IT job openings every month. So we've seen that trend most years where after a holiday season trailing off, there's a beginning of the year bump. And we've seen that. The question is whether that can be sustained. So hopefully any day now we'll know how June turned out, and we'll be reporting that out. Craig, let me get back to you specifically about what Michelle mentioned on how we are looking for ways to identify and highlight new and creative ways to find talent or develop talent. In fact, we have a program coming up this summer. It's our annual leadership retreat, which we'll talk about in a little while. But one of the key topics of focus for that annual leadership retreat, which focuses on the tech and broader business leadership of the state, is new ways to source talent, new ways to develop that talent. I'm curious if you, being in that business, have seen some of those areas that are really have legs, show some promise, or things we haven't mentioned here that you've seen.
Well, we went over some of these topics in the recent knowledge workforce session that we had. That was certainly of keen interest for everyone there, and it was great to hear from the panel. We had a mixed panel of industry and education talking about things that are going on within the corporate community as well as things here within the education community. I think a lot of companies are looking at the importance of reinvesting more dollars in skills training and closing skills gaps and getting maximizing their investment with current resources and retraining people to new roles and new positions. I see that as a very popular one. Michelle mentioned the Code Academies. That was a fun one. One of the companies here locally is offering that on the weekends, really to people of all ages and abilities to come out and start learning to code and get involved in software development. And then we had a lot of good conversation around the educational institutions. We're blessed here in the state with a fabulous community college network, right, with great universities. In fact, the university system and the college and community college system is one of the great attractions for companies in North Carolina to come to North Carolina because we are producing great talent. But there's probably still opportunity for us to refocus and target specific curriculum and training opportunities so that they come out of folks come out of school better prepared to go right into technical contribution positions, and I think the community college sees that as an opportunity for initial training as well as retraining of people that are looking to make career changes, and certainly that's been a popular thing here in the last few years since the recession hit a few years ago. So we've got a great infrastructure to enable that. So that's really doing more with what we have, bringing to your question about bringing additional and new creative resources. We see tools like LinkedIn, obviously, has made tremendous strides in the last 3 or 4 years of being a sourcing and networking tool. And it really comes down to, how do you reach out and network with people? And despite all the technology, it's still about people connecting with people. Mm-hmm. So I do encourage anybody listening today that it's really about getting to know people in your community, in industry. So it's not just about job boards and postings and social media tools. It's about still direct connecting with people. So the tools are great, but mm-hmm. We're always looking for ways through groups. One of the reasons why we love Encita is the chance to do the face-to-face networking here within the community and meet more people.
Good. Well, that's definitely one of the benefits of any sort of industry association is that direct connection. You mentioned something that I want to pick up on because we heard an HR leader with a fairly large company make a similar observation, and that is it's one thing to know about the social networks or the ways to reach out to people virtually, but to be smart about it's another thing. And one thing they decided was, we only hire really good people here. Most of our employees are pretty top flight, and top flight people tend to surround themselves with other top flight people. So rather than just a traditional employee referral program, which is always valuable, a lot of companies offer that, that does require the employee to refer someone. There's an action required there. They use LinkedIn and other types of similar networks to see who the network is around an individual employee who's a high performer. And then they may do direct outreach and try to connect using other metrics with people who they assume, through some history of being accurate, I guess, are likely to be high achievers, high performers, and might be great targets. And the employee in question may not even be the driver of that. So anyway, that's a sort of an interesting take on it that we heard at a recent session.
Well, just to piggyback on that idea, and certainly at Resolve It, we do our best to encourage our employees to bring their friends and family.
Right.
If you enjoy the work experience with us, we bring people you know, too. And we make that rewarding for them to do that. But I was at a human capital conference about 6 months ago out in San Francisco, and a large global consulting company that hires over 100,000 people a year.
Wow.
Said that their strategic goal is to fill 2/3 of their positions through employee referrals. And I was a little bit stunned by that, especially on numbers of that scale. But I think it goes to the fact that a lot of us are really trying to get away from sort of the faceless technology and get back to that referral-based network for reaching out to new people.
Well, take into account your the sort of the trend lines you've seen, and then put your binoculars on and look forward. And when you take into account momentum and what you see down the road, particularly given the business that you're in, do you think North Carolina is on a pretty sustained and sustainable growth curve in its job demands, the demand for high-tech talent? What do you see that could either provide a hiccup to that or even a boost to that?
Sure. Absolutely bullish on North Carolina and the technology opportunities going forward. There's so many great things about living and working here in this state. It's hard to enumerate in this time frame we have today. Things that have helped, the attraction of quality name brand companies, some of the logos that we've brought to the state in the last 5 years are a powerful precedent for other companies. We always talk about the access to low-cost power. For technology people, that's
right.
Very important.
Yep.
And we have made some marked improvements with the legislative activities in terms of making this more of a business-friendly environment and tax policy and investment policy and things. So it's an attractive place to come. What would probably help more from a technology perspective is you tend to find most of your core IT and technology people at corporate headquarters. The fact that we have so few Fortune 500 corporate uh-huh. headquarters located here in the state is probably the single biggest hindrance to sort of large-scale technology job opportunities. The fact that we don't even have a Fortune 500 in Raleigh anymore, you know, is frustrating, I think, for a lot of us. I think there were, about 7 or 8 in Charlotte?
Right.
So if we could work on that number and getting the corporate headquarters activity for large to even solid medium-sized corporations, you know, that tends to bring with it a tail of opportunity for traditional information technology positions.
That's true. One of the things we talk about a lot, the association is not an economic development organization per se, but we work with the economic development community a great deal, as you can imagine. Many of them are actually members of ours from the State Department of Commerce on down. And the buffalo hunt is often how they refer to the effort to go out and try to get a big name brand company to just up and move its headquarters here. Only so many will do that over a period of time. So parallel to that effort, one of the things North Carolina has been pretty successful with is attracting fairly large centers of excellence here for companies that are not going to move their headquarters here, whether that's a Cisco Systems or Microsoft has its second largest site, IBM has its second largest site. We have a lot of second largest sites here in North Carolina, and that surprises a lot of people, Lenovo with its U.S. headquarters, and there are a lot of other examples I could give. So with centers like that, as well as tech centers like DB Global, which is the Deutsche Bank in-house tech center, HCL Technologies. So there are some others out there that are like you, wanting and needing a lot of growth and need a lot of help to get there. And everybody wants to hire a lot of people really fast. MetLife just moved into the area with a major announcement. They're hiring hundreds of people or trying to all at one time. So you're right. There's a lot of competition out there. Well, Craig, we're going to switch gears here in a minute, but tell people how to find you or find Resolve It on the web or virtually.
Sure. You can hit us up at our website at www.resolveit.com. That's resolvit.com. Then our Twitter handle is at resolveitllc, or locally here in the Triangle, we have a Resolve It Raleigh Twitter handle as well, and it's a place where you see information about what's going on with the company, as well as we certainly tweet out and post all of our career opportunities as well.
Great. Well, thanks a lot for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate you being on our inaugural show. Speaking of where to find people on the web, I want to remind all of our listeners that you're listening to NC Tech Talk, the monthly internet radio show about the business of technology in North Carolina. You can find us on the web at nctechnology.org, where you can learn about the North Carolina Technology Association, which presents this show. Also there you will find our blog, where we have a lot of good content about what's going on with our industry and in public affairs and in other areas, and you'll find our show under the news tab. You also can find us virtually via Twitter at NCTA. We have a hashtag NC Tech Talk, and we have a LinkedIn company page, so lots of places to find us on the web. Earlier today in the program, we mentioned that Steve Chase was here with us. Welcome back, Steve.
Thank you for having me.
Sure, glad to have you here. Steve is Vice President of Global Sales for Alphanumeric Systems, and they are a really interesting story. They have undergone some transitional activity, to say the least, probably a euphemism for a lot of change in a hurry, and it's gone pretty well, I think. But Steve, tell us about you a little bit and your history with Alphanumeric and what's been going on with the company.
Yeah, I would tell you, Brooks, it's been a great ride with Alphanumeric, and it's one of those things where we've celebrated our 35th anniversary as a company recently. I've been with the organization over 25 years, still wake up in the morning, you know, loving going to work and facing these new challenges. There have been a lot of changes over the years as we've had to adapt to all these different technology things out there relative to the old days of providing a box to now providing people to help drive that box or to go help drive that information. So very different to the point that we even as a company started seeing this 5-6 years ago and actually acquired a learning company. So when you talk about how we went about this from a knowledge management standpoint, as we attacked it head on and incorporate that into our solutions today. So, you know, today we have basically three pillars of offerings, and they're under the classic technology pillar, managed services, which is more of how to provide IT, as many people an analogy like tone on phone. It just works. People expect it to work today, and that's what we do there. From a knowledge standpoint, so we have a complete learning division to go help create content and provide learning on a global basis, which I'll touch on here shortly. And then also from a people side. So years ago, as we were putting engineers out to do projects, the clients would come back and say, hey, can you leave this engineer here on site for a few weeks to help us out? And it spawned almost 20 years ago, a staffing business within Alphanumeric. So we have our own recruiters. We provide people, and not just technology related, but across all aspects of an organization's groups, the ability to come to us, look for resources, and we do it throughout the U.S., Canada, U.K., and now in Barcelona right now. So it's changed a lot over the years.
I would want to volunteer to be in that staff meeting.
Yeah, exactly. It's been, like I said, a great ride for a company that started as a small IT, buy some equipment and have it installed, to today, over 550 employees throughout the U.S., Canada, Europe, U.K., and in Barcelona, providing services to, it's interesting, the small companies that we've dealt with for 35 years, we have a few of those original clients, to global enterprise class organizations that need true global solutions, and multilingual, which is our biggest challenge for us, when you talk about trying to find unique people that can provide support in a native language and, more importantly, culture.
Well, that's an interesting comment. I hadn't even thought about asking you this question in advance, but it reminds me of a panel that you and I were part of not too long ago when the Canadian provinces and the U.S. southern states had their annual conference, and we talked about some of the challenges in doing business in other countries, or particularly if you have locations there and have employees there. You've gone through this in Canada, you've gone through this in the UK, now in Spain. As you've grown from being a locally focused company, now 35 years later being a global company, we found at the Tech Association that a lot of our companies are facing similar growth opportunities and business opportunities. So we've launched a program to highlight how to do business in other places. We call it the Go Global series, but tell us a little bit about some of the challenges that you faced as you grew, not only in type of company, but where you have a footprint and sort of what your resources were that you found valuable in addressing those challenges.
The biggest challenge is dealing with customs.
Okay.
So just getting things in and
what
out.
What are you trying to bring back in here, Steve?
Yeah, it's going out. You know, when we try and set up shop, you think it would be fairly easy to get infrastructure to a location. And our biggest challenge in terms of infrastructure, and the other is the human capital, the people. We went up to Montreal because it's very much like this area in terms of education and higher ed. The thing there, though, is we find people there that speak minimum of three languages, and many speak four. So mm-hmm. we have access to great employees, great people that can help support, global needs. Barcelona, similar. We have to learn a lot about how to deal with employees in different countries. Mm-hmm. And you think healthcare in the U.S. is a challenge to keep up with. Try keeping up with it relative to the U.S., then in Canada, now in Barcelona, and then in U.K. And it's you have to have your little check boxes in every single location that you're located. But it is unique, and you have to deal with just a lot of different things. We have a great team at Alphanumeric that's been able to, put together, the advanced side of going into another organization or another country, the infrastructure side of where we need to have facilities, and something that we think is very simple, just getting a communication line in place in a new facility is very different in Canada as it is in the UK, as it is different in Barcelona. Mm-hmm. And then having the financial side, that's been another daunting task for us, is as we are dealing with global customers and each one says they want us to invoice them in a different way, whether it's in U.S. currency or Canadian currency or in the U.K. dealing with euros or in Europe dealing with euros. So it's a whole new level of knowledge that we've had to bring into the organization to deal globally.
Well, not only does going global take a lot of effort and take you into perhaps types of work and even types of clients that had not been maybe traditional for you, you've also shifted your lines of business, which you talked about, and you've also moved into certain service offerings at the request of customers, responding to customer demand. All of these are examples of things that a company does if it wants to survive and thrive and be a leader in its field, even if it's not a brand new player in that field. That's a great opportunity for me to bring Mark in for a moment. Introduced everybody to Mark Montoro from the Tech Association earlier. He heads up our programs and communications. And Mark, we've got something coming up later this summer where we'll be featuring this very topic of staying ahead of the curve. How do you remain a market leader once you are one? How do you remain a peer leader once you are one? Tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely, Brooks. It's probably one of my favorite events of the year just because of the nature of having both a golf tournament that we do at the beautiful Grandover Resort in Greensboro, but also a leadership retreat that that we hold. And it's really one of those that falls right in the middle of our events where you see some of the interest networks that we talked about earlier with Michelle and Craig, but also some of our larger conferences. And this is really one of those blends where it brings in the larger audience, but it's a more intimate group of leaders. And so we will mix in both some keynote speakers as well as some panel discussions that will talk about both sides. It was no accident that we had both a talent discussion as well as an innovation discussion here. So our first panel is going to talk about how companies are pushing innovation within their organization to stay ahead of the curve and really be able to drive that. So some of those companies that will be featured, some you may recognize. Red Hat is obviously at the front pushing the open source movement, which you obviously associate with innovation, but there's also companies like Belk, a retail chain that's going to be pushing a lot of technology into what they're doing. as well as Cashel Branch that does background checks and security checks. So really interesting discussion there that's going to respond to our keynote discussion that is brought in by Steve Todd, the Vice President of Strategy and Innovation for EMC. So a lot of good discussion around that, and we think it's going to be a real interesting conversation.
Great, thanks. That's coming up, I think, at the end of July, last day of July, first day of August. So it should be a good discussion and a good networking opportunity at an executive level. Steve, I want to pick up on that. You described some of the things that you've done externally as you've grown and changed to meet demand and to remain a market leader. Tell us about what does that mean internally? Are there systems changes? Are there approaches to the way you hire and organize internally to help meet this change? This change structure that the company has and the growth that it's seen?
You know, it's really been a shift in the type of people that we have at Alfa Numeric. You know, we have a core that's been with us the entire time. We have a lot of employees that have a very extended tenure at Alfa Numeric. You'd think me being there 25 years is a long time, and we have some that are significantly longer than I've been there. But the biggest shift, and, you know, Craig can probably attest to this as well, when you look at providing, you know, IT services and, you know, clients are consuming that rather than doing the classic, I'm going to buy it and implement it, and they're consuming IT, you have to have a different type of person that can work with those individuals. So, you know, one of the painful parts of Alfa Numeric's growth and change is we had to move out of the 80% product, 20% services even 6-7 years ago to today, where 80% services, less than 20% product oriented, is a different type of people you have to have on your team to be able to deliver those services, to work with the client, to do those soft skills based pieces. So internally, we've had to invest again in people and different kind of process and tools. I mentioned, you know, acquiring a learning company. We found that in order to get the right people, we had to focus on investing in some of the people we already had internally that needed to be retrained. We found that incorporating learning into how we provide delivery adds value to our customers. So incorporating that into the solution does that, and it helps attract. Again, we get a lot of our employees through existing employees bringing people over that say, you know, come on, we want to be a part of something that's great and having a lot of fun doing it.
Good, good. You talked a lot about the ways that you've grown, the ways that you offer new offerings to customers. You've taken existing customers and grown the relationships significantly. How does a company like Alfa Numeric, that probably credits a lot of its early growth and success to that individual relationship that gets built initially and then sustained over time, how do you keep those relationships strong? How do you engage your customers with your company as you grow and have multiple locations like you do now?
Yeah, I would tell you we listen. I think we listen very well to our clients. What I've seen, and I've had the opportunity to do this in one organization, to watch people move. You know, IT is a very transient area of business, and we have clients that have continued to, and individuals that have continued to shift and move to other organizations, that when you provide a valuable service, when they trust you, it is a people business. You can't do everything through your phone. You can't do everything through just emailing people. In fact, Harvey Braswell, the president of the company, we have a unique contest that was just announced last week that the individual, not just sales, but this is sales, operations, anybody that's involved in business development, which he considers majority of the company,
right.
You know, the individual that has the most face-to-face customer engagements over the next 30, 60 days, I can't remember the exact time he just launched, it actually starts tomorrow, so it's through July and August, so for 2 months, gets a several $1,000 prize. So just noticing that being in front of people, regardless of whether they're in the or Raleigh area or Philly area, up in Montreal or Mississauga, in London or in Barcelona, it's getting out in front of customers. And I think if you look back at the legacy of Alfa Numeric, it's been about the people It's been about the relationships. It's mm-hmm. been about the people trusting and knowing us as a very ethical and quality organization to be associated with.
Well, you ought to tell your team, then come to one of our events and knock out 100 touch points at once.
He stole my promo.
There we go. You mentioned Harvey Braswell. He and Karen, who own the company now and lead the company now, bought it from another pioneer in technology leadership in North Carolina, Darlene Johns, who founded the company. And you've had a chance to work with both all of them. So my question really is, how has Alphanumeric, a longtime member of the association, longtime volunteer leader of the association through board service and other things, found engagement with an organization like NCITA to be valuable to you?
Well, the most significant one is that Darlene met Harvey through NCITA. When she was past chairman or president mm-hmm. of the board, she met Harvey, who was then with, I believe, ACS. Mm-hmm. And that started the beginning of a great friendship, and ended up in Harvey had retired and decided he didn't want to be retired and wanted to own a company. And Darlene had asked for his help in marketing and selling the organization. And he stood up and he and Karen said, well, shoot, let's do this ourselves. And, and that started another great transition for our company. Personally, you know, the events that we attend, you know, NCITA allows me an opportunity for a large amount of touch points in one venue. And based on the type of event, let's just say the event coming up at the end of the month where we have golf, we have the leadership conference, it allows me to engage with people in a very casual mm-hmm. manner across the table from someone versus in a business boardroom where you really learn about the individuals and you get a different side of people very often in those areas. You also learn about people, something simple as playing golf. You understand a little bit more about their personality. Are they club throwers?
Benders?
Are they fussers and cussers? Or do they just let it slide off their back when they miss that 3-foot putt? And a lot of times what you see out there in the golf course, you're likely to see in other ways in the business environment. And so it's very, very telling and a way to really understand more about individuals. So the leadership conference in the evening and the events brings a little more structure to it, but mm-hmm. still you're in there with great topics, good people that you're able to engage with in really an informal manner.
Well, I think that's true. One of the things that I meant to mention earlier in the show when we were talking about some of the government affairs activities that we as an association get involved in is an area that I know is near and dear to your heart, and that is our involvement with those who procure and deploy IT solutions in state government. And so one of the things we do, in addition to the Knowledge Workforce Interest Group that Michelle mentioned earlier and a few others that we have, is a government vendor network where at least quarterly, sometimes more often, as demand or circumstances warrant, we'll convene companies like Alphanumeric and others who do business with the state or would like to, and bring a CIO of an agency or a cabinet secretary or a key legislator, or in some cases the CIO of the state himself, who we've actually just confirmed as our guest at the third quarter gathering on August 26th. He'll be talking about the new IT restructure of IT within state government that the legislature has mandated. And Chris Estes, who is the state CIO and a member of the association, will be coming probably with his deputies to talk about the status of that, what that means, how that will affect those who do business with the state, et cetera. So I think one of the great ways an association benefits its members, like your company or others, is you're not always best positioned when you're operating under your own brand name. Sometimes it's really good to have a conversation or dialogue with policymakers or buyers under the umbrella of an association. It's a far less salesy environment. It's very much a peer information share. And I think sometimes relationships and even information that isn't readily shared in a direct sales conversation does get shared in a more comfortable setting like that. So just like the conference you mentioned and some of these interest networks, we're able to really bring some high caliber speakers to the table who don't think of it as speaking to alphanumeric as a brand or resolve it as a brand, but really view it as talking to the sector. And we really try to play that role as best we can. And you all are great supporters of that. Well, to wind up, Steve, tell us about the future. You've had a lot of change in the last few years. Do you see steady change as she goes? Are there big plans for major announcements or shifts in the future? What does the near term look like for alphanumeric?
Well, I think you'll see announcements within the next year of yet another location globally.
Great. Fuquay?
Yeah. The interesting thing for us that we see is that I mentioned the analogy of the phone. People just expect it or IT to work, and they don't care anymore about how or why. They just expect it to work. More and more, we find ourselves in the position of clients wanting a true single point of contact to resolve issues within their organization. And we are more and more finding ourselves being that entity for our clients. So unique, it's not uncommon for someone on our service desk to get a phone call that it's not, I'm having trouble logging in. It's not as much, I need help with this application. It's the light in my office has gone out. So facilities, it's too cold in this area of the building. I'm moving my cube from one place to another, and I need help. Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, in an enterprise organization, they may have 10 to 15 different people to call to resolve or remediate an issue. And more alphanumeric is finding itself as that central single point of contact. Do we do that work? Do we fix it? No, but under ITIL foundations, we track that. We get it to the correct remediating agency. It gets resolved, and we close it out on behalf. And then, more importantly, for a client, can report on that activity. So we find ourselves being more and more involved in being that single point of contact. And enterprise organizations, even had one recently where some new doctor's offices were brought up from the concrete slab to a fully functional practice, and we were involved in coordinating a lot of aspects of even the construction logistically on getting that done, because they talk about it, high-level program management in that regard. And at the end of the day, do we help them make sure that they don't have to think about IT as they did traditionally, that it just works? Yes, that's the core of our business, but a lot of these other things that we do for them are where we add value as an organization.
Great. Well, it's good to hear so many good things going on with both alphanumeric and ResolveIt and the industries that you serve. You both serve a lot of clients who are in our space, and it sounds like that there's a lot of activity all across the board, and we appreciate both of you taking time to come and be with us. Going forward, this show will be, as I mentioned earlier, taking place the fourth Monday of every month at 1 o'clock live on Business Radio X, Metro Raleigh Station. And we will then archive this show and segments of it going forward. So be sure and check out our website, which is nctechnology.org, where under the news tab, you'll find that material as you look for it going forward. We also can be found on the web. We can be found virtually beyond on the web on Twitter at NCTA. We have a hashtag for this show of NC Tech Talk, and our company page on LinkedIn has a lot of activity as well. We also maintain a blog on our website where you'll see some content a little more fleshed out than on some of the other social media channels that we use. I want to thank Mark Montoro and Michelle Calton from our team who are here today. They will be rotating with me some hosting duties in the future. They're very excited about that. Right, Michelle?
Definitely excited. This has been exciting for us to launch this today.
It is. I think we've gotten a lot of good feedback. There was some good press, actually, coverage here in the last couple of days about our launch, and we've gotten some good feedback already just about doing this sort of thing. So hopefully now that we have a product, that good feeling will continue. I want to encourage everybody to tune in next time on July the 28th at 1 p.m. When we will be live again, and we hope that you will visit our site and visit us virtually between now and then. So, Steve And Ann, who I spoke to earlier and is the owner of the station here, and Craig at Resolve It, great to have you in the studio today. Thanks for letting us be here, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brooks.